Hello!
Hey guys, it's Arden Cho.
Hey, I'm Holland Roden.
Hello, this is Ian Bowen.
Hey you guys, this is Melissa Poncio.
Hi, I'm Lyndon Ashby.
Hi, I'm Dylan Sprayberry.
This is Megan Tandy.
This is Tyler Posey, and you are listening to Not Another.
Not Another.
Not Another.
This is Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast.
Yes, it is!
Oh!
Woo!
Hey, this is Jeff Davis. You're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast, my favorite podcast in the world.
I've been spending time, this time's on my side, and if I make it home, our worlds collide, cause no one really knows me at all.
Hi everyone. Welcome back to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. We are powering our way through the final season of Teen Wolf. This is episode 149 for us, which is a lot, and episode 6.16 for Teen Wolf. So it's called Triggers. And so over halfway through the final season, and that is the episode that we are talking about today. So I am one of your hosts, Natalie. I'm joined, as always, by our other host, Karen. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, this is what we're doing. Neither of us are all that well at the moment, so we sound a bit fun, but we're here. And if you want to get in touch with us to talk about this episode or any of the previous episodes of the season, or just life, the universe and everything, you can reach us on our Twitter, which is NATW Podcast. Our email address, natwpodcast@gmail.com. Instagram and Facebook both have that handle as well, NATW Podcast. And you can follow us on Tumblr at notanotherteenwolfpodcast.com, which is where our archive lives as well. So we're talking about Triggers today, the episode Triggers, and we learn a few previously unknown triggers about people, and some things are triggered and people have guns that have triggers, and all sorts of things happen with that word involved. So kicking off immediately with our favorite quotes, mine was, now I don't have the exact wording because the stream wouldn't load back for me to get it, but it was the moment when the nice murdering boys are in the high school, and Nolan, who is feeling a bit uncertain, when Monroe is telling them to kill our new Ed Sheeran-like friend, Edgar. And they, you know, and she was like, get rid of it or something. And Nolan goes, that's Edgar. He's in my trig class. Like, which that was my favorite line and moment of the episode in terms of watching this character, Nolan, you know, come to terms with how deeply and badly he's gotten into something that maybe he, like, you got to ask yourself, like, Nolan, what were you hoping for? Like, when you were upset about the supernatural, when you were freaking out about Liam being different and whatever it was you're doing, what did you hope the end result was going to be? Because it seems like a bit of like a dissidence between like what he first wanted and now faced with like what people actually want to do about it, which I think is a very common thing for people who are like all het up about some sort of cause or perceived injustice, that when the truth comes out, they're actually not comfortable with it. But I don't know. What do you think Nolan was trying to achieve in the first place if he's like this now?
I mean, to be fair, I don't think the kid's particularly mentally stable.
Yeah, that's also true. But yeah, that moment of sort of, I hesitate to say clarity, but that moment of disturbance for him, I really, well, not liked, but appreciated for some reason. Okay, so that was me. How about you?
My favorite quote was from Melissa to Mr. McCall when she says of the pack, let them do what they're best at, saving our asses. I really liked her delivery on it. And I like that she basically shut him down and was like, you've known about the supernatural for literally 5 minutes. So why don't you just, you know, let them do their thing? And it's so true, because chances are, like, he could have screwed something up, and it's better if he just leaves it to the experts.
That's interesting, because, like, on paper, I get it. But again, I'm really not happy with her. I'm really not happy with her attitude about this, especially towards Raph. Like, I was really shocked at myself for how pissed off I've been at, like, her responses about what she wants Scott to do. And like, I know what she knows he's capable of, but I kind of don't appreciate very much that she, like, it sounds really bad. I don't appreciate that she trusts them all to know what to do. Like, they're in a tough circumstance where they're these kids with these powers that no one else has. They have experience. They do have all of that. But it still seems weird to me to see, like, a person with a duty of care like her, like his mother, say those kind of things about it. Like, I don't know, just there's something about the attitude that is putting me off. And I did think Raph was sort of trying his best, even though he, like, I feel like his response would be more close to my response, like, oh my God, like, this is so terrible. What are we going to do? Like, oh my God, I don't know what resources to use for this, but I'm the adult. It's my job to make sure these people are okay, like, kind of situation. And I feel like I was closer to where he was at than in the last couple of episodes. Her, like, it's not trust in Scott. I know she has trust in Scott and she believes that he's, like, awesome at what he does, but I feel like there should still be an impulse of, like, but I don't want you to do it, if you know what I mean. And I found that kind of jarring.
Yeah, that's fair. I think Raphael was being, like, responsible, which is pretty good and something new for him, so that was nice to see him kind of step up to the plate there. But with Melissa, I don't know, I like that she has so much faith in Scott. I think, you know, the maternal instincts aren't there as much as they were in earlier seasons, but I think it's kind of nice to see the character grow like that and become, like, obviously she still cares about him, still worries about him, but it's nice that she understands, you know, he's the leader and he's the one that has to go out there and stop whatever bad guy. And, you know, the faith in that is great to see on screen.
I guess, but I still, yes, I agree. And I don't know, I don't have any other argument, to just, it doesn't feel good to me for some reason for her as a mother to be like, yeah, we just let all these kids do this. I know that they have been doing that for however long and she's helped them, but hearing her phrase it in these certain ways, I don't know, I think with different phrasing I would have accepted it better, but something about it did not quite sit right, but never mind. Yeah. I get the sentiment.
Let's jump into the discussion now then. And the cold open on this episode was actually pretty cool. We see a whole bunch of kids in class and in the hallway with their hands cut, except this red-haired kid who we learn is Edgar. He was very cute, and you're right, he kind of does look like Ed Sheeran. And he's trying to avoid Aaron and, was it Nolan or was it?
It was Aaron and Gabe, the tall guy. So what's Aaron's deal? I thought he was spiders.
I think he's, I mean, he's the fake Aaron is dead and the spiders re-entered his real body. I mean, I think he's still dead.
Did it rebuild him? Like,
I don't think he's still, like, I don't think he's the old Aaron, but
was fake Aaron only dead for a little bit? Like, can it just, like, change where it goes and then pick up the old one again? Like,
I don't know. It's so weird. Anyway,
I'm very unclear on the subject of Aaron. Like,
I think once we learn more about what exactly this thing can do, we'll figure that part out. But, it, you know, he keeps trying to avoid them, and they eventually corner him in the library and cut his hand open, and turns out that he's actually a coyote, like Malia. His whole family is, which is pretty cool. I was really expecting them to say werewolf, and I'm glad they kind of took it in a different direction. Mm. But the interesting thing here is Aaron comes back, sees that his hand healed, and he says he's looking for someone who can do more than just shift, like me.
And what the fuck? What is this? What's Aaron? What's going on? Like, sorry, but like I'm so lost.
Yeah, I don't, like, was Aaron bad from the beginning, or is whatever took him over talking about that? And like, what can he do more than just shift? Because we've seen him go from spiders to human and that sort of thing, but beyond that, nothing.
Like, is he looking for a host, do you think? The Inukite, is that sort of what you think this is?
Maybe. I mean, the interesting thing here too is that Edgar is eaten by the spiders, but instead of it consuming the body like it did with Aaron, it kind of acts differently. You can see the spiders under his skin and all of that.
Well, remember when the one spider went under Theo's skin and he stabbed it and got it out? Like, was that like they were testing out Theo to see whether he was the right match and he got it before it started, or?
I don't know.
But yeah, so Aaron's a coyote, not Aaron, Edgar's a coyote. Like, how many people in the school, because it wasn't quite everyone, I was like counting, there were some people that hadn't been tested yet, but they clearly suspected this kid and like followed him and was like, you're next. So what, how many of these kids are there that are just like random low-key like supernaturals? Yeah,
I don't know. This is the first time we're really getting a glimpse into the school at large for which characters are supernatural, so your guess is as good as mine.
They should just all come out together and like be like, it's like half of us, get over it.
Yeah. What? And I wanted to mention, too, your favorite line, the one from Nolan when he says, that's Edgar, he's in my trig class. I just... like the way that they paired him and Gabe together for this was really interesting, because Nolan's been kind of crazy up until now, but you can see him wavering and you can see him kind of leaning into, you know, yes, these creatures are monsters, but they're also human too. And I think the more he goes up against his friends and people he's known in school, the harder it's going to be for him, versus Gabe, who strangles the kid while Nolan and the guidance counselor watch, and he's just totally calm. Not a big deal.
Gabe's a fun guy. The juxtaposition of those two characters, of Gabe and Nolan, I think is very intentional, but, and I don't know if it's the fear demon tapping into them or if it's just their actual personalities of, like, how they'd react, but... yeah, I don't know. Nolan, he's set up for, like, someone who's going to, like, freak out and be like, can't do this, this is wrong. But, like, does he deserve to be on the side of good and forgiven and stuff? Like, you know, like, is he like a Draco Malfoy who's, like, never going to be, like, chill with the gang until, like, 30 years later and they're weirdly best friends, a.k.a. Cursed Child? Or is he... immediately like, oh my god, I'm in the pack, I'm on the side of good, if he has a break and like is like, can't do this, here's all the information, I'm good now?
I really don't know. I think if he does end up switching sides, which you're right, they're setting him up to do that, I think he deserves some sort of redemption. I mean, that's kind of Scott's thing anyway, so that would make sense to me that they would do something like that. But he's also done some pretty terrible things, so they might never trust him, but they could use him to help them defeat Gerard.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, they don't trust that they've got Theo hanging around, and I feel like Theo's done some pretty bad stuff, but...
Worse than Nolan, I'd say.
Yeah, I suppose. Something about Nolan's, like, bystandering really bothers me for some reason.
Yeah. Speaking of Gerard, though, well, Mr. McCall goes around and starts interviewing people. He interviews the guidance counselor. Well, he interviews Nolan with the guidance counselor there, Miss Monroe, and they are asking about the werewolves escaping. Of course, we already know that they're dead. And I just thought it was interesting that everyone still thinks they're alive, but I don't know why I expected this storyline to end. Like, I kind of just figured, okay, they think they're still alive, but they're not, so, you know, next problem. But it would make sense because McCall would notice that they never arrived where they needed to go. And so they talk about them escaping and everyone still thinks they're alive. And it's just, it drives a lot of this episode, actually, which I wasn't expecting.
I was surprised that, maybe it was because he knew he wasn't acting in an official capacity, but I was surprised that, like, Monroe had the power to, like, stop Rath questioning him.
Yeah, that and, like, if that was a legit investigation, that kid would have a lawyer, like, his parent would be present. I was like, this isn't super realistic, but it kind of does make sense since he's not doing it through the Bureau.
He's sort of under the table, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else?
Then he goes and interviews Gerard, and they're talking about logistics and the amount of guns that he has, and, like, again, just want to say this feels so relevant, especially when he's like, what can I say? Business is booming. Like, when you're dealing in guns, that's not necessarily a good thing.
That's so weird. I still don't have the... I still just don't have the mental, like, mindset of apparently the norm in America, maybe not for you personally, but, like, the fact, the private possession of guns, which does not happen here, the fact that, like, he says, you know, people like to feel safe, and once again, people feeling safe by owning a gun hinges on the fact that they are prepared to use it. And I really just don't feel like my culture, like, is, like, would be prepared to use it. Like, if someone broke into their house or something, they maybe certain personalities, but in general, like, wouldn't have the whatever it takes to just, like, feel like they had the right to shoot someone, even if they owned a gun. And so that factor that, like, oh, people want to feel safe, like, people are arming themselves. It's like that only works if the people are prepared to use the weapons. And that's just bizarre to me.
Yeah. And I want to talk about that a little more later on, too, because we find out where all of those guns end up going. But before that, this episode actually surprised me a little bit in that the issue that they were having where you think that Nolan has spotted Mason taking blankets to everybody, and then come to find out Mason's like, Nolan's really bad at this whole following people thing. Yeah, under the radar. And it's a trap that Scott and Liam, particularly Liam, set up for them. And it's so that they can pull all of the guards away so Malia, Lydia, and Scott can go into Gerard's warehouse, his safe house, and figure out what's going on in there.
Yeah, I didn't quite, like, for a second I was like, Mason, like, I was like, it's a real stretch for me to believe that Mason would, like, walk by Nolan's classroom and kind of, like, look in and, like, you know, that it was a real stretch for me to believe it was accidental, but I still wasn't 100% sure. I was like, is this just badly done? Or is this a trap? And then, obviously, then it was a trap. But, yeah, it didn't quite sit right with me that it would be like, whoops, accident, about the setup for the, you know, being followed. And, yes, it's a diversion to pull everyone out of Gerard's business warehouse and so the others can go in.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I don't quite know what they were looking for. Like if they were trying to take something or just see what was going on.
They were still looking for the kids.
Oh, the kids. That's right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, Nolan reports this and two guys come out and they're like, we don't see anything, we don't hear anything. And Theo decides to start fighting with Liam to make sure the hunters believe that they're all actually at the zoo. And this was kind of funny because Theo really goes all out, punches Liam in the face a couple of times. And I think he's kind of pulling a Brett here in that they're using Liam's anger against him to show him like, hey, you're out of control. You have to figure this out, because he keeps denying that anything is wrong.
Yeah, this kind of got weird. I feel like Theo does have some genuinely bothered by Liam's behavior. Like, I think that like those taunts is not necessarily just him being a dick. It's him digging into something that he sees as a liability, kind of, whether that's a good or a bad thing. You know, it's quite mean, but you know, he's also quite frustrated. The stuff that he's shouting, you know, to quote unquote Scott, was really like, it felt very pointed. It didn't feel like, you know, it was just a little bit of nonsense. It felt like it was something he's genuinely quite worried about. Like, so I don't know if that's something that will keep progressing for Liam or not, with the anger and the, you know, but I think what was kind of being accused is that he's like actually like quite not a coward, but like that he's like quite nervous that he can't fight in cold blood, basically, like that he can't actually do combat and in cold blood, and just to get the job done, that he has to actually be like angry and therefore like probably not as careful and not as useful. And yes, I felt quite strongly about the points Theo was making about Liam, but I don't know if that's going to continue or not.
I think it will. I don't think that his story with this is over yet. I think he's starting to figure out what it's all about, but they haven't really come to a solution yet, and I kind of expect that to happen. But I also really liked the other side of that, where Theo is actually being helpful. And I mean, he's being an ass while he's doing it, so you're kind of annoyed with him, but It was pretty funny. He did have some good things to say, though.
Yeah, and Liam, the location that they're at, the zoo, the abandoned zoo. I've been to an abandoned zoo once. It's quite weird. So abandoned zoo, very bizarre. And they are there again with the like little bits of, in this case, it's not scientific, it's historical, but like weird bits of like intense logic or intense like referencing put in to explain something, like the streets of ancient Mykonos, where they're like channeled through the town and people are able to not able to navigate it. And Liam's like, what? I like history.
Yeah, that was interesting to me. Like, I liked what he had to say, and I definitely believe that he could possibly know that. But we went from, like, the I fell in a hole kid to this new side of Liam. And I guess it's just his character progressing, but I don't really know why exactly we've ended up where we have, you know?
Maybe he also just likes ancient Greece, like you.
Maybe. He did say he liked history. Time. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, they're at the abandoned zoo. I've been to an abandoned zoo. Have you ever been to an abandoned zoo?
I have not.
No, it's quite weird. It's quite a weird thing to exist in the world. Like, So I'd be interested to see if this is like actually a location that they found in LA or if they sort of mocked this up, like, because it definitely looks like an outdoor, I don't know, it could be a fake set, but yeah. So they're there, and at what point, I was going to say, at what point do you think they knew it was fake, like Gerard and stuff like that? Like that even, because he sees the camp, and I was wondering if even he knew, like, whether it was, a you know, staged or not at that point.
I think he did know that it was fake. I think that's why everybody went out there, you know, to give the others a false sense of security so that they could trap them in the warehouse.
Yeah.
So I think he was just waiting for them to do something like this.
Too many moves. Too many, he did this, so we did this, so he did this. Like, too many predictions of moves. It's very
Yeah, to me. Although Gerard has talked before about being, you know, or even the others have talked about whoever's in front of us isn't just one step ahead, you know, they're like three steps ahead, so...
Mm. That's true.
It kind of makes sense to me.
Yeah.
And the shocking thing here, though, is that Gerard is perfectly fine if Nolan dies in there. You know, he sends him into the zoo to help bring them down, and particularly Liam, and he's totally fine. And you can tell that even Miss Monroe is like, wait a second, we're going to let this kid die? Like, are you sure? And Gerard just has no sympathy for him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Gerard cares if anyone dies, really. Like, I'd like, you know, I'm surprised that Monroe was so shocked, if you know what I mean. Like, the fact that Monroe was like, oh, no, oh, like, I thought, like, does she not know what she's in? Like, you know, does she not know what she signed up to?
I think Gerard just continues to push it one step further than she's willing to, and she is continuously surprised by that. I mean, I kind of am too. I know that he's cruel, and I know that he's, you know, despite only being human, is quite evil, actually, except he's had children. He had grandchildren. Do you really have no sympathy for a child?
No, not really.
Guess not. Well, like we were saying, they knew that they were coming. All the guns are gone by the time the four of them, Chris, Lydia, Malia, and Scott, get into the warehouse. And Gerard talks about wanting to kill Liam so that Scott will fall, because the bond is stronger than that of, like, father-son kind of thing. And watching Scott fall from grace will break the rest of the pack, which, I mean, they've hinted at that already, because we had the conversation between Sheriff and Scott about prisoners of war, and sometimes, you know, people have to die because it's war. And we've seen Scott sort of flounder with that decision. So I think they're going to lead to possibly Scott coming very close to breaking the oath that he kind of gave himself from the beginning.
I just don't know if that oath is practical. I don't know. There are other, it is the context of this world. There are other supernatural worlds where our, you know, the heroes kill people all the time, and it's like not a judgment on their character. But I don't know. Like, what does he achieve by not killing Gerard at this point? Like,
I really can't answer that, actually.
Yeah, like, I think, you know, all he achieves is having someone else do his dirty work. Not his, you know, someone else will tarnish their hands, you know, so that he doesn't have to.
Yeah.
Which, again, is a classic hero thing as well, like, where you have your bad characters, your side, not bad, your supporting side of good characters who are killers. So that some morally pure guy doesn't have to be, but
right.
It's a bit, yeah, I don't know. It's you know, Scott is what he is, and if we're sticking with that, then I guess we're sticking with that. I'm sure someone will kill Gerard. Maybe Styles will. That might be nice.
That would be kind of cool.
Yeah, but I think it'll probably be Chris or possibly even Kate. I don't know. We don't know what side she's going to – how she's going to be when she reappears. But, I don't know. It's so like, did Gerard, like, what happened to him, like, getting the bite and being a werewolf? Like, what happened there?
Is that a non-rhetorical question?
Yes, it's a non-rhetorical question in terms of the fact that he was sick and then he was, like,
they gave him the wolfsbane.
Yeah, they were like, you know, Mountain Ash doping him and all of that. And then Derek gave him the bite. And then what? Like, and then he was, like, gross for a while.
Right, and then Chris fed him the wolf's bane, which cured him.
But did it cure him of being a werewolf as well?
I think so.
Or did the bite just never take? Like, it just made him gross?
I don't think it took.
Okay.
Although we don't really know that, and maybe by the end of the season we'll find out he is more than human.
If you were Chris, how pissed, and you are like Chris now, how pissed would you be that you helped your wife, like, kill herself just because she became a werewolf?
I mean, I don't think there are words for something like that.
Like, I'm just reminiscing, like, how pissed would you be? Like, I know, like, it was within her moral, like, code at that point and what they believed about werewolves, but, like, how freaking wrecked would you be over that? Like now that you're like, werewolves are fine, werewolves are not the problem, like, I would just die. Like, I don't know. I think Chris is gonna die. I think that we got some pretty freaking good indicators this episode that Chris is gonna die as well.
But, oh boy. Well, let's go back to Liam for a second.
Yeah, because sorry.
He hallucinates Brett, and that was really interesting. And it's kind of,
yeah, to me it was very unexpected. I was like, did we ever know anything about this?
About Brett? Like,
well, about him being bullied like that.
I think so, because they were enemies.
Yeah, but I didn't think it was like this. Like, that's the thing. I thought it was kind of just like they clashed heads, you know, he moved school, like they had a fight, you know, he moved school.
Brett's always been kind of a dick, though.
He has, but then they got to the point where they're like, they're our friends, and I just don't know if I could ever just be like, they're our friends about someone who did this. Like, I thought it was more like they had, like, tension on the field, that they'd had fights, not this kind of thing.
That's true. I mean, okay, yeah, it was kind of intense. So maybe the fear toxin is just making everything worse in his mind, and it is made up, but it's something that really triggers him.
I don't think it was made up. Like, I think he'd been he knew this place because of that incident, and he was very disturbed being there because he was remembering it. I don't think that that was not real. But it does sit a bit weirdly with the history with Brett. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, they had a very kind of shitty history with each other, but I don't know if I could ever get over this incident to the point where they're like, he's my werewolf friend and ally who's helping me to train, you know. Though I suppose Puck and Kurt did end up like best friends on Glee, and he used to put him in the dumpster.
People change.
Yeah. I don't know. It was very disturbing.
Either way, Liam ends up not killing Nolan, which must have been pretty hard for him. Theo later says, you know, you broke your hands trying not to do it. And when he's about to possibly kill him, Theo comes in and knocks him out 5 times, apparently. And I thought that was pretty funny and excellent timing.
Yeah. Theo, I just think Theo wants Liam to be better. Like, he wants him to get a grip and be better, basically.
Yeah, and they really kind of bonded in this episode, which I liked a lot, actually.
Yeah, me too. Even though I kept looking at them together and being like, oh, they're both, for some reason. And I don't usually have this with other shows or other, like, characters or pairings of people. I was like, oh, my God, they're both so white. Like, I just kept watching them, like, I don't know, maybe it's because they both have, like, exactly the same color hair and, like, it was kind of both kind of floppy and stuff like that. And it's not like I was mixing them up. Like, I know them both well enough not to mix them up. But for some reason I was watching them and I was like, they look like the same person. For some reason that I don't really understand. I was weirdly like, they look too samey. I think it's because they both have floppy hair. And yeah. Anyway, Liam says it's very long.
It is very long.
Yeah. No, I think they're good. If Theo wants people to be better, then hopefully it means he's better too. I don't know. Like, I don't think Theo is going to turn around and do anything dodgy from here on out. Like,
no, I don't think so.
Though he did punch Liam, and Liam punched him as well, you know, in the previous episode. And once again, it's like, stop punching people that are on the same side as you. Though the fight obviously served a purpose, but just Liam was a bit too stupid to get on board with faking the noise and stuff like that. Like, plan that out before you get there, guys. Like, but no, I did. In general, I am still pro Theo and hope to continue being so.
Speaking of planning things out before you get there, that is what Scott, Malia, Lydia, and Chris did, and mm-hmm. that didn't necessarily help them.
No, and this was very, like, because they're sitting there, they're sitting in the car, they've got this whole, like, plan, as you say, like, and I didn't follow this too well at first. Like, when you just said just now they were looking for the kids, I was like, oh, that makes sense, because obviously they find them when they're in there, but I thought it was just like, oh, we've happened to find this. Oh, can you smell that? There they are. I didn't know that that's intentionally what they were going there for. So I was like, why is this happening? Once again, we've got an entire episode where the activity of the day, you know, activity of the episode takes place only over a couple of hours as opposed to days or weeks or whatever.
I just realized that the reason they actually did go to the warehouse to begin with was to destroy the weapons, because when they got into that room and they weren't there.
That's what I thought. Yeah. I was like, were they going to blow it up? Like, that's kind of what I was. I'm like, are you going to just carry them all out? You're just going to take them all away? That's kind of what I thought. And then they're like, all the weapons are gone. Like, it's empty.
And then Scott smells the other two and has to open that door.
Yeah, that's what I thought originally, but I was like, it happened. And, yeah, but they have that plan. The most interesting part of all of this to me was Lydia, like her distraction from the vision in the car and the distraction of what she was seeing once they got inside the warehouse as well. Like, that was my thing, which sort of peppered throughout the episode and her scenes during it. But yeah, things happen before that, you know, they mm-hmm. get trapped in a room, they try to get out.
Yep. They hop on that shoving unit, which is like such a trope in these kind of situations. But
what are you talking about?
Like, Malia and Scott, when, you know, the whole, like, can't touch the floor thing, have to get, like, super close together, like, it just, I saw it coming.
Oh. I don't know if I've seen enough episodes that, I don't know if I've seen enough circumstances where people are in, like, this kind of laser.
Not necessarily the laser thing, but, you know, hiding in an alley from some bad guy presses the girl up against the wall kind of thing.
Oh, you just mean the chest, like the whole like lying on his chest thing.
Yeah, just in general, that sort of thing. But it was cute anyway, and it really is continuing to build up this romance between them. And I think it's for them kind of putting it in as a season 6B arc. Like, it kind of works. They're building it pretty slowly, but it all makes sense.
Mm.
But they do make some mistakes, and the lock drops to the floor, hits the laser, and the room is suddenly without air, and they're close to dying.
The chemical extracts the oxygen. So the chemical, like, burns off the oxygen, in whatever that foamy chemical was. Was that right?
I think so. They said that the unit was for any fire so they're putting the fire out and then getting rid of the oxygen by just pulling it out of the
sucking room. It. Yeah, that's fair. So it's not intentionally to kill people.
Them. They've just
That's just sort of, they've sort of rigged it like that. The fact that gets set off if someone crosses it, as opposed to if like a fire is detected.
Mm-hmm.
I did like Scott's face, like when he was watching, when Malia went up, like when she sort of ninja'd up and swung up to the roof, like he had this look on his face like, oh my God, like so cool. So I did like that.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. What I really liked though was Lydia in this scene, because she kicks some ass, which she doesn't do all the time. So it's nice to see her in action like that. And then Chris says, you know, they can't knock down the door with regular means, but a banshee can knock down a steel door. And she kind of blows it open and saves them. But I really like this. It shows how powerful Lydia is.
Yeah, I don't know if we knew she could do this, Chris knew she could do it, so. But yeah, it was cool. As I said, I'm still worried about the visions she's having, but she's very useful.
Yeah, those visions are, we'll talk about them in a second, because that kind of wraps up the episode. But before we get to that, back to Malia and Scott, they end up kissing, which was really nice. I love that she was the one to do it. And I think that it's interesting, you know, she does it after a near-death experience, but I don't think it's necessarily in reaction to that, because this has been building for a while.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think that there's definitely a point where, you know, you don't want to not do it anymore. Like, you know, they've been through that together, and now it's just like her thinking about, I don't want to die here. I want, you know, there's all these things I want to do. And then she's like, oh, shit, I want to do that. And I definitely think it's kind of a, maybe wasn't as actively present, like as actively like aware maybe until then, or for her certainly. We'd had a little bit from her of before of kind of awkwardness.
She's definitely in denial though.
Yeah. And then him, I don't know. Him, I don't know what he'd been thinking about, because he was definitely like into it. Like he was definitely like immediately like, oh, hell yeah. But I would like to know what he'd been thinking about it before this point.
Yeah, I just get a feeling that, you know, he's seen her there every day for how many years, and she's so strong and fearless in a lot of ways, and I think he really respects that. And it's just, you know, you bond closely enough with someone sometimes that it just turns into this, whether or not you were expecting it.
Yeah, in the warehouse, like, yeah, I definitely got some like him kind of feeling some feelings and admiration and that kind of thing, but yeah, I'm not against it. I'm just curious about it, basically.
Yeah, me too. We'll see more, though, I'm sure. I know. We've seen things from the trailer.
Yeah, that's kind of, like...
looming?
I guess, like, intense and, like...
What's the point of it?
Yeah. Like, kind of, like, why are we diverting to that right now? Like, what reason are they having a sexy shower together? Like, you know, like... bed is, you know, making out on a bed or what. We've seen that. We've seen like, oh, this is the romance progressing, but like, hey, we're taking a shower together. Like, I wonder if there's a reason. Like,
I don't know. It could be comic relief. I mean, sometimes they do that sort of thing, start off with like a cute or romantic scene, and then it quickly devolves into something else. And with Malia yeah. involved, I could see that happening.
Yeah. For sure.
But let's finish this up with kind of everything we learned from this episode. And it was kind of peppered throughout, because Lydia has been having visions, and she's been hearing things like windshield shattering, and she actually sees it hit with something and it kind of cracks and expands. And then she hears guns and shell casings hitting the floor. And she knows that this sort of is a bad sign for the mission that they're on. And she tells Chris they need to get out of there. And of course, that's too late. And we find out later on that it had nothing really to do with that mission exactly, but it does come into play at the very end of the episode, because when Scott and Malia steal the map and everything from inside of that room, they figure out that Gerard has been looking at nematons all over the world. And he's not looking to wipe out supernatural creatures just in Beacon Hills. He wants to do it everywhere. And in order to do it in Beacon Hills, he gave all of his guns to the entire town for free and said, all right, let's go to Scott McCall's house.
Allegedly, legally. Raph was like, all the guns have been distributed legally, free of charge, to the townsfolk of Beacon Hills. What is that? Like, excuse me? Like, how does that work?
You can give those things as a gift. I'm sure if anybody can find a way to do it, it's Gerard. So this didn't bother me too much. But the one
thing... No, I know. It's not that it bothers me. It's just that it's crazy.
Yeah. The one thing that was kind of crazy to me, though, okay, so he gave guns to the entire town. Nobody else in that town, save for the actual supernatural creatures and, like, a couple of other people, Chris and Melissa and all of them, nobody says, count me out. I don't think this is a good idea. I actually kind of like Scott. He's a good dude.
Maybe they will. Maybe it's not, like, literally every person, and they're going to run into more people who are like, what the shit is going on?
Yeah, I'd like to see some rebellion.
But yeah, so it's just crazy. Like, did he call a town meeting? Like, hey, everyone, you're all aware of werewolves, right? Yeah, okay. So we've just been chilling with that for the past 50 to 100 years, but we're not going to be chill with it anymore. So off we go. It's really strange.
Yeah, and they do end up attacking the house, though, and Lydia luckily gets everyone to duck before the initial bullets come through, or the arrows, actually, and everything seems fine until you're looking sort of down on top of everybody, and this huge pool of blood is seeping across the floor, and we don't see who's bleeding out, except for their hand, and we know it's not Mason because the person was white. But it's probably Melissa, because we've seen Melissa in the hospital in the trailers. So this wasn't as much of a cliffhanger as I was kind of hoping it would be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought it might have been Chris and that this was the end, but it didn't look like his hand.
You're really waiting for him to die.
I don't want him to, but I know he's going to. No, I just think he's going to. I don't know. Maybe it's not. It's probably Melissa. I still think Chris will die.
Yeah. But the good thing is we do see Melissa kind of talking in the trailer, and she's awake at one point. So I think it's going to be fine. I don't think they're going to kill off Melissa.
Okay. Good.
But yeah, that was... That wraps up that episode, and I thought it was pretty interesting. I like seeing Liam in this role, and I like seeing his character grow throughout the season, so I liked the focus that was on him.
I liked the focus on Theo, so that's okay.
Also totally fair.
We actually have a bit of stuff in terms of what's coming up for Teen Wolf in the next couple of weeks, and a couple of things that a couple of pieces of like news and stuff that needs to be debunked. So first of all, we got the someone posted on our Twitter the other day an IMDb listing for Teen Wolf series starting in 2019, with the synopsis saying a couple of years after Scott McCall left Beacon Hills, he returns to help the next class of werewolves. And it says, you know, Tyler Posey signed on. I believe from my knowledge of IMDb that this is a bungled fan listing of the podcast that was talked about, the spin-off podcast for the future, if you know what I mean. I'm not sure if you saw any of this, because someone said, did you guys see this? According to IMDb, this new Teen Wolf series in 2019 so far, only Tyler Posey signed on. I just don't think this is true. Like, I think that if this was real, there would have been a press release. There would have been a ton of stuff about it. I believe that this, anyone can edit IMDb, so I believe that this is someone like getting their information wrong about what they talked about the podcast, you know, the spin-off podcast, and that is kind of what they have posted there. So I wouldn't get too worried or excited about that at that point. I'm pretty sure that's not a thing. So yeah, just in case anyone saw that and was like, what? I don't think it's a thing. The second thing is that they revealed a couple of weeks ago, I think before episode 4 and 5 even, or maybe it was after episode 4 and 5. No, yeah, last week, sorry. That Jackson and Ethan are indeed returning to Teen Wolf as a couple. And that they are now together, which we very much suspected and is confirmed. And there was a video clip scene posted of a little bit about their relationship. And apparently this is like something that Jeff always planned, like that if he ever came back, that Jackson was going to be with a guy, either as bisexual or gay. And that's all good. Obviously for us, and I kind of just would have actually liked this not to have been spoiled in advance. We very much suspected it from the scene we saw at Comic Con, which was just a scene of them entering the school together and like checking people out and being like, they were clearly working together in some capacity, but they vibed in a way that we were like, oh, that should be a thing. But they didn't actually spoil that at Comic-Con, and the fact that they have revealed this in advance, I don't know if it's like to get some sort of hype or what, but I would have preferred to like see this on screen live and be like, well, it happened. So yeah, I don't know. That's happening. I'm excited about it, but would have liked to see it for reals. Then we had a couple of pieces of Twitter feedback. One of them was as I mentioned, the people inquiring about the IMDb listing. One of them, though, given my awkward sign-off in the last episode, Andrea B, Timey Wimey Daffy, says, I want to tell people not to be racist all the time too, but I think, /hope, no such person is watching Teen Wolf, which is true and reminded me of my terribly bizarre and awkward sign-off after we were overwhelmed by the politics of last week's double episode. So bizarre. She also said, didn't like that Deaton was back. Surprised how much I like Scott's dad being back. Theo feels a bit like a Spike character. Shouldn't like him, but you can't help it. This whole storyline scares me more than anything before because it feels too real, probably. So that's how we're feeling about the Hunter War, I guess, the mob nature of what's been going on. Yeah. Anything else that we know or wanted to talk about for for this?
No, I don't think so.
All right. In that case, we'll see you next week. Hang on. Oh, is that really what it's called? Oh, I'm so excited. They better use the fucking song.
What is it?
So, I'll see you next week for, and this is the return of Jackson and Ethan, and it's called Werewolves of London.
Oh.
And I have used that song in our show before. I've used that song in our intros before, and I really love that song. And so, yeah, if that's really what the episode's called, I'm going to die. But according to IMDb, that's what it's called. So I'm very excited for this. So I'm very keen to get that one. Yeah, to be able to see that one. So, yeah, until then, I guess it's been real. Yeah, I don't know if it's worth saying or not. Like this episode that we watched this week, 16, I did not love for a Teen Wolf episode. It felt like too much time spent on a small, well, not small incident, but I don't know. Usually I like how fast the show is. Like usually I like that it, you know, it's only a day or an certain incident. For some reason I didn't like that at this point in the season or for this episode. So I'm keen to, I think I just want to find out what the hell's going on too much. And this did not tell me what the hell was going on, especially with the Inuk Ite. So I'm getting impatient perhaps.
Yeah. I didn't mind this episode so much again for the character work, but it wasn't as standout as some of the others have been. So, you know, but we're gearing up for the end, which is going to be a ride.
Yes, it hopefully will be. All right. Well, we'll see you next week for Werewolves of London and Jackson and Ethan and whatever they bring to the table. So very keen for that. And yeah, I guess see you then. So until then, farewell. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Yeah, no one really knows me at all.
I'm not.
Okay.
I was waiting for you to transition.
Oh, sorry. You're a big girl. You can announce your own favorite quote.
I mean, okay.
That's okay. Sorry. Hang on. All right.